Well, after that, you know what I'm going to say next, so let's go ahead and do it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins, which is chapter 11 of the book of Devarim, or Deuteronomy, not quite to the end of the chapter. Verse 26 will do it. So it begins like this, and the first word, of course, is the name of the parsha in this case, because it's a unique word, Re'eh. And in English, that's translated a bunch of ways, see, or sometimes behold in the Old English, or even, hey, check it out. But I set before you, he says, this day a blessing and a curse. Now, this is another one of those things that's kind of interesting in the Hebrew. Re'eh is singular. That's you, singular. See, behold, check it out. But the next word here that is before you, I set before you, is plural. So it's the you all form of the verb. That's plural. I'm setting before you all this day. And so the implication is basically each of you are to see for yourselves, but there is a combined thing here that you're to understand, and that is the blessing and the curse. And that is in the fact, in the plural. And it says, the blessing that. Now, some renderings, and I don't care for this really, the word there is not im, which is usually the rendering that gets translated into English as if. It doesn't say the blessing if. It actually says the blessing that you hearken under the commandments of Yahuwah your El, which I command you this day. Now, why is that important? And the sages make a big deal out of this, and I think they're right. It is important because we'd expect to see the word im, if, but we don't. So we see this blessing that you shall hearken under the commandments of Yahuwah, which I command you this day. And the example that I like, I've used it for years, if you don't see the difference is, it's kind of like saying, okay, I want you to fix my car. And if you fix my car, I'll pay you $500. But if I say, I'll give you $500 on condition that you fix my car, basically what I'm going to do is give you the $500 up front, and then you fix the car. So the point is there a bit more trust in the case of the blessing? What we're seeing here is that the blessing comes first. You get the blessing that you shall hearken under the commandments of Yahuwah, which I command you. Now, on the other hand, it says this curse, if, that word is im, the curse if you do not. So the curse comes after it's clear you ain't going to do what you should have done, and he was trusting you to do. That is, hearken unto the commandments, shamar, right? Hear and obey the commandments of Yahuwah your El. But instead, you do the nasty evil thing, and guess what? We've seen this a lot, and I'm going to emphasize it because Scripture emphasizes it. This is the key element of the portion tonight. Behold, see, check it out, and it has to do with a commandment to walk in, obey, do, hearken to my commandments, and avoid the paganism, all the stuff that's associated with the fake gods in the land. And that's what he says here. But if you turn out of the way, this is where the curse comes, which I command, to go after other gods which you have not known. And it shall come to pass, he says, that when Yahuwah your El brings you into the land, that you're going in to possess it, then you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal. So this idea of here's a mountain that represents a blessing, here's one that represents the cursings. And we see that more than once in the book too. Are they not beyond the Jordan, going into the way of the going down of the sun, in other words, on the west side, in the land of the Canaanites that dwell in the Arabah, over against Gilgal, beside the terebinths of Moreh? For you are now going to pass over, he says, pass over the Jordan River, to go in to possess the land which Yahuwah your El gives you, and you shall possess it, and dwell therein. And, here we go, you shall observe to do kol, all of the statutes, ha hukim, Vayet ha mishpatim, the statutes and the ordinances which I set before you this day, hayom. And it is still, folks, this day. All right, chapter 12. These, he says, are the statutes and the ordinances. Again, that word there is hukim, the statutes. Remember, the idea of a hook or plural hukim is do this. I don't care if you understand what it means or why it is, but just do it. Which you shall observe to do in the land which Yahuwah, your Elohim of your fathers, has given you to possess in all the days that you live upon Haaretz. Now, we're going to see in this next verse a really interesting, these conjugations appear several times, but I always point them out because it's called the peel conjugation in Hebrew, and it is a particularly dramatic form of the verb. In other words, in Hebrew, you can conjugate a verb so that it means one thing, and then with the peel conjugation, it means the same thing, only pretty much more so. So, for example, if I say, tear something up, then you and that's in the normal conjugation. But then we say, in the peel conjugation, it amounts to tear it to little teeny itty-bitty pieces. You know, you think about it, stomping on them. If I say break something, and then in the peel conjugation, that same word means smash it to smithereens. So you can see it as we go through here. You shall utterly destroy, there it is, all the places wherein these goyim, these nations, have that you are to dispossess, serve their gods, upon the high mountains, upon the hills, under every leafy tree. And you shall, here's some more peel conjugations, break down, yeah, really break them down, their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, burn their asherim, their little phallic poles, with fire. And you shall hew down, cut them off, smash them, really make sure they're down and stay down, the graven images of their gods, their Elohim, that you shall destroy their name out of that place, exterminate, blot out, do away with, right? This is an emphatic understanding, and it really brings home the point. That's why I like pointing out the conjugation. You are to break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, burn their asherim, hew their graven images, really destroy utterly the very name of their fake gods out of that place. Why? You shall not do so unto Yahuwah your El. So one of the elements here, let's make this as clear as we can, because he certainly does, this paganism, the things that were going on in the land associated with these fake gods were not just horrific, detestable, they were abomination. That's the strongest word in the language, unto Yah. And essentially what this Parsha is pointing out, and over again even, is he doesn't even want to see a hint, not a vague resemblance of the pagan crap and the pagan practices, or the pagan altars, or you name it, anything associated with them, associated with the worship of the one true God. Now we're going to get some more positive reminders of that. But under the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose to put his name, out of all your tribes, to put it there, even unto his habitation you shall seek, and there you shall come. Okay, so he's going to put his name somewhere. You'll go there, and to that place you'll bring your burnt offerings, your olah, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offering of your hand, your vows, your freewill offerings, the firstlings of your herd, your flock. In other words, all of the things that you'll bring to this place where he will put his name. And there you shall eat before Yahuwah your El. And I love this. This word, too, is going to appear seven times in this Parsha, in the various forms. But the word is Sameach. Okay? Hag Sameach. Have a joyful hag or feast. Right? The Simcha Torah. You may have heard these words. Simcha, Chameach, Sameach. They're variations on the same theme. But the root word there, the Sheen, Amem, Chet, it means rejoice. And it's very important. And it is fundamental to the true feast of Yah that he's going to talk about. And the things that he's going to have folks do. So you shall rejoice in all that you put your hand to. You, your households, wherein Yahuwah your El has blessed you. Don't do after that which we see here today, where every man does whatsoever is right in his own eyes. That's an indictment. We see it again in the book of Joshua, by the way. For you are not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance which Yahuwah your El is giving you. Don't get ahead of yourselves. Now, but when you do go over the Jordan River, he says, you dwell on the land which Yahuwah your El has caused you to inherit, and he does give you rest from your enemies all around you, so that you dwell in safety, then it'll come to pass that the place which Yahuwah your El shall choose to cause his name to dwell there, well, that is where you shall bring all that I command you. Again, your olah, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the offering of your hand, all your choice vows, everything which you vow unto Yahuwah. And here it is again. And you shall rejoice. That root word, simcha. And it's in the plural this time. And it's samachtem. Y'all shall rejoice before Yahuwah your El. You, your sons, your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, the Levite that's within your gates, because he doesn't have any inheritance or portion with you. So take heed to yourself that you do not offer your burnt offerings in just every place where you think you can take a rest, but only in the place which Yahuwah shall choose in the day, in one of your tribes, in one of those tribes, those places where they're being given their land. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. Now, notwithstanding, let me ask a quick question, because I've always thought this is fascinating. How will they know? Right? Now, they got the pillar of fire by night and the cloud by day. That certainly seems like a good way. But as far as causing his name to dwell someplace, I've always thought that was kind of an interesting reference. And I suspect that when it happens, it really is going to be pretty obvious. We certainly know that there have been references in Scripture to the fact that it did happen. We know where some of those places are. Notably Jerusalem, but before that there were others. There were also places where the tabernacle rested in the wilderness prior to that. But I guess it's the contrast that strikes me as interesting. Here we live in a land where the tabernacle, his temple, if you will, has been destroyed for cause. It does not exist anymore. We don't know where it was. Exactly, and we certainly know that it doesn't sit in the world anywhere today. So his name literally does not rest anywhere today. And I guess part of the problem is most of the world doesn't even really know his name. So all I can offer is that when that time was to come, I think it would have been really clear, and that certainly would be a miraculous thing to see, knowing that his name and he has chosen a place to have it dwell. All right, notwithstanding, he's talking about places where you bring your offerings too. That is the place. Notwithstanding, you can kill and eat flesh within all your gates, after all the desire of your heart, your nephesh, your soul, according to the blessing of Yehuyurel, which he's given you. The unclean and the clean may eat thereof, as of the gazelle and as of the hart. Only you shall not eat the blood, right? There's a prohibition against eating blood. The life's in the blood. You shall pour that out upon the earth like it was water. You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn, or of your wine, or of your oil, or the firstlings of your herd, or of your flock, nor any of the vows which you vow, nor your free will offerings, nor the offerings of your hand. But those you are to eat before Yehuyurel in the place which Yehuyurel shall choose. You, your son, your mad servant, your maidservant, your daughter, the Levites are within your gates, and you shall, here it is again, Samach, rejoice before Yehuyurel in all that you put your hand to. So take heed to yourself, he says, that you do not forsake the Levite as long as you live upon the land, right? He does not have a specific physical inheritance. His inheritance is the Creator, and he has a job to do. So don't forsake him. When Yehuyurel shall enlarge your border, as he's promised you, and you then say, I would really like to eat some flesh, because your soul desires to eat flesh, you can do that. You may eat flesh after all the desire of your nephesh, your soul. Now, if the place which Yahuwah, your El, shall choose to put his name, if it's too far away from you, then you shall be able to kill of your herd and your flock, which Yahuwah has given you, as I have commanded you, and you can eat within your gates after all the desire of your soul. Now, this is another one of those interesting places. I note there's a Rashiism here. I don't necessarily accept it, but of some of the things that we'll see that the sages will make a claim, this is probably one of the more, not just interesting, but they have a better case here. Because it says you're to do this thing, you're to kill of your herd and your flock, which Yahuwah has given you, as I have commanded you. Now, what does that mean? As I have commanded you. Certainly there have been commandments to offer and to do this job of killing the animals. Is that what he's talking about? Well, the sages will say, no, Rashi claims it's a bit more than that. And in fact, he says, the way that I have commanded you means what they call a kosher kill. And so what the sages, the rabbis will claim is, here is one of those places, and at least there's a case. I don't necessarily accept that it's a proof, but they have an interesting case. The claim is that the oral tradition commands how it's to be done, right? How you do a kosher kill. So when he says, as I have commanded you, they'll say, see, he's telling you, as I told you orally and how to do this kosher kill. Yeah, okay. I would say that the case is interesting, but not proven. Anyway, how be it, as the gazelle and as the hart is eaten, this is how you shall eat thereof. The clean and the unclean alike may eat of it. Only just be steadfast in not eating the blood. He makes this point. It's very clear. Do not eat the blood. The blood, for in the blood is the life. You shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. I guess, is that clear? How many times does he say it? Yeah, as many times as it's necessary, and maybe not, because there are still a lot of people that don't get this and don't seem to think that it matters. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out upon the earth as water. He says it again. You shall not eat it, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, when you shall do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Wow. Okay, he says it several times here, and the last time he says, you shall not eat it, so that it might go well with you and with your children and your children's children after you. Sounds like there is a curse associated with doing that which he forbids. Do that which is right in the eyes of Yahuwah. Only the holy things which you have and your vows shall you take and go unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose. And there you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood upon the altar of Yahuwah your El, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out against the altar of Yahuwah your El, and you shall eat flesh. Observe and hear. There it is again. Shamar and observe all and do, in other words, all of these commandments. Et kol Ha Devarim. Now, that word, right, Devarim, is words. The sayings, the things, the instruction. Torah is that word. Observe and hear all of these Devarim, Ha Devarim, which I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever. When you do that which is good and right in the eyes of Yahuwah your El. Now, when Yahuwah your El shall cut off those nations from before you, that you're going in to dispossess them, and you do that, you dispossess them, and you dwell on their land, take heed to yourself that you don't get snared, that you are not ensnared to follow after their gods, after they're destroyed from before you. Now, remember, what's the point? The reason they're being destroyed is because of their fake gods. So don't do the following. Don't inquire after those gods and say, hey, how did these nations worship their gods? Even so, I will do likewise. Okay, full stop, quick bit of history. Most of you probably have heard this, but if you look at the traditions of the Roman pagan church, and notice I use that term explicitly, what did they do? Not only adding to and subtracting to the word, but they said, you know, we got all these nations. We want to spread the gospel. And they don't want the gospel. They want their pagan traditions. So, hey, what the hell? What do we care? Let's just Christianize them. We'll say, you got some Yule logs. You got some bunnies and some eggs. You got all kinds of crappy traditions that you think are just wonderful. Well, we'll make up some bogus story about how that's really something associated with the cross or with whatever we think you might be able to buy. And then we'll ask, how did these nations serve their gods? I will do likewise. We'll say they're fine. Come on, bring them on in. It's a big tent. No, it's not, folks. And if that's not clear already, just wait. But one of the things that I'm going to make sure we understand as we go through this portion, because the whore church has ignored this, and as a result they have been exiled for it. And by the way, the whore synagogue is in exile too for similar but not identical reasons. It's got to do with the fact that he detests this crap. That's the reason for the Peel conjugation. Tear down, destroy, smash to smithereens their altars, their fake gods, everything associated with them. Do not ask this question. How do these nations serve their gods? Hey, I think I'll Christianize it and do likewise. Let's bring them bunnies and eggs and Christmas trees on in. If it's not clear, he says this. Last verse in chapter 12. And by the way, there's a slight difference between the Hebrew and the English renderings in where they put the chapter marker here. And it's fascinating because both of them almost ought to be the beginning and the end of a chapter. You shall not do that unto Yahuwah your El. Because every abomination to Yahuwah, everything he hates, again, that word, to'ibat, it is in fact the nastiest, the most disgusting word as far as something that is not appealing, well, that's disgusting to him, abomination, in the Hebrew language. Every abomination to Yahuwah, which he hates, is that clear? They have done unto their gods, even their sons and their daughters, they burn in the fire to their gods. Wonder if they cut out their little bodies and cut off their little genitalia and inject them with puberty-blocking drugs and sacrifice them and say, hey, isn't this wonderful? And then put Zyklon B in their little bodies. Folks, we are seeing things today that I will suggest, hell, I'll come right out and say it, I think are as clear of an indication of why this curse is extant as you're going to find. Every abomination to Yahuwah, which he hates. They do. Hell, not only that, they advertise it. They subsidize it. Planned Parenthood pays for it. They put it on TV. They teach it in the kids, to the kids in the public cesspools. If he hates it, they do it. They subsidize it. They teach it. What an abomination. All right, the first verse in chapter 13, or the last in 12, also says this. This is a repetition of something I emphasized last week. All coal of this word. And by the way, it begins with the Aleph Tav, so that's the direct object. The direct object of the verb, which is coming in a second here. Et kol ha-debar. All of the word is what I am pointing to here. And by the way, the Aleph Tav, the beginning and the end, right, points to this. Which I command you, that you shall observe and do. Okay, is that clear enough? Well, if it's not, here's what he says. You shall not add to it, nor shall you subtract from it. Don't add fish on Fridays. Don't say, hey, let's put bunnies and eggs and Christmas trees in there. Don't say, well, let's add 15, 16, 1700 extra commandments for Sabbath. Let's change times and seasons. Right? You could sit down with a Bible. You could sit down with a Catholic catechism. You could sit down with a Jewish siddur or some kind of a writings there and ask, hey, what have they added to and subtracted from? Answer, most of the book. In both cases, they have more traditions, more pagan crap, more stuff that they've added to and subtracted from, all in violation of exactly what we're seeing here. Do not add to, do not subtract from. By the way, this is chapter 13, and if there's one verse and one chapter that ought to literally stand out in your mind as we go through this Torah portion, it just might be this chapter, because this is one of the most damning of the chapters in the Torah when it comes to understanding why it is that the Whore Church and the Whore Synagogue are still in exile. What it is that he hates, and he's just finished telling us, but now we're going to get a real indicator, graphic even, of how much he hates it. If there arises in the midst of you a prophet, a so-called prophet. Now, you'll hear sometimes, prophet, of course, is the word Navi in Hebrew. And one of the things that you'll hear referred to is a Navi Shaker, a false prophet. And that's not exactly the term that's used here, but it's what is being described, no doubt about it. If there arises in the midst of you some kind of a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and that sign or wonder actually comes to pass. Okay, so, hey, so far so good, right? This sign or wonder that this so-called prophet says, it comes to pass. It's what he spoke to us. And he said, oops, wait a minute. Here comes the warning that just because it comes to pass, don't be suckered. So, the sign or wonder comes to pass, the thing he told you. And then he says the following, hey, you know what? Let's go after other gods, which you've not known, and let's serve them. What was it we've just been talking about? The Romanized pagan church. Let's add all these other fake gods. Let's take Easter Bunny. Let's take the most important day in all of human history and let's name it after a pagan fertility goddess. Gods which you have not known. Let's go after them. Well, that doesn't sound good, does it? What does he say you're supposed to do? Let's go after these other gods. You shall not hearken to the words of that prophet. Do not hear and obey that one. Or that dreamer of dreams. You know why? Because Yahuwah Yireel is testing you. He's putting you to the proof to see, to know whether or not you really love him. If you love me, keep my commandments. But no, we like the bunnies and the eggs and Ishtar and we like Mithra, the sun god. We like his sun god day. Right. This test, folks, is about as clear as it can get. And yes, I will say it, it's damning. We ought to be paying attention. Yahuwah is testing you. To see whether or not you love Yahuwah Yireel, what's the most important commandment in Scripture, says the Messiah, with all your heart, with all your soul, love him. Shema Israel, hear. Yahuwah is one, you're to love him with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. He's testing you. Do you really do that? Do you love him with your heart, with all your soul? After Yahuwah Yireel, shall you walk? What, you mean not after Easter? And the bunnies and eggs and trees and Mithras and sun god. After Yahuwah, Yireel, shall you walk. Him you shall fear. His commandments are the ones you shall keep. And unto his voice shall you shamar, hearken, hear and obey. And him you shall serve, and unto him you shall cleave. Now that prophet, meanwhile, that dreamer of dreams, He doesn't seem to care about that fellow too much. Listen to see what he says. Put him to death. Ooh, this sounds serious, doesn't it? That prophet, that dreamer of dreams, shall be put to death because he has spoken perversion against Yehuyarel. How's that for a fake priest? I don't care if he's got a little fish hat, white robes, and calls himself the Pope and the Vicar of Christ. He has spoken perversion against Yehuyarel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, redeemed you out of the house of bondage, to draw you aside out of the way. What was it Yeshua's followers were called? No, not Christians, folks. They were called followers of the way, which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk in. Isn't it interesting? What does he say? The way which leads to destruction is broad. A whole lot of folks go that way. As for the way which leads to life, it's narrow, and few there be that find it. We're supposed to walk in the way, they were called followers of the way, which Yehuyarel commanded you to walk in. So, you shall put away the evil from the midst of you. By the way, the way is ha-debar-ka. So it has kind of the you can see the root word in there that sounds a little bit like the word, right? The path, the way. If your brother, now here what we're doing is we're going to emphasize just how serious this commandment is and whether we should take him seriously or not. If it's your brother, the son of your mother, or the son or your daughter, or the wife of your bosom even, right? These are close family members. Any of these folks, or even your friend who's like unto your own soul, it comes to you and entices you secretly and says, hey, let's go and serve other gods. How many examples do we need, folks? The whore church is full of them. Gods which you've not known, not you nor your fathers. Or, for that matter, the gods of the peoples that are round about you. Here we are in America, we got all kinds of fake gods. You got a church of Satan, you got various denominations that call themselves Christians, but looks to me like, if you read what the Word says, they're worshiping, as Paul put it, another Jesus whom we've not preached. So, nope, not the gods of the peoples that are round about you, nigh unto you, or far off from you. Doesn't matter whether they're close or far, do not follow after them. From one end of the earth to the other, still doesn't matter. You shall not consent to him, you shall not hearken to him, nor shall your eye even pity him or her. Nor shall your eye spare, nor shall you conceal him. Are you getting the impression? He is so serious that even if this is your brother, your son, your daughter, your wife, your friend who's like your own soul to you, and he does this evil, nasty thing, let's go serve other gods, whether it's near or far, doesn't matter. Do not consent to him, don't hearken to him, don't pity him, don't spare him, nor conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. Wow. I'll admit, folks, this is tough stuff. But it ought to, if nothing else, indicate just how seriously he takes not only this false prophet, but this idea of, oh, okay, we can add to and subtract from, we can bring other gods in. No, you can't. What will you do to this person? You shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be the first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. You shall stone him with stones that he die, because he has sought to draw you away from Yehuyarel. How about if he's got a little robe on and he's called a father or a priest or a rabbi and he's saying, hey, we got some better gods here? I would say at the very least, don't hearken to him. He has sought to draw you away from Yehuyarel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And what does he say? Kol Israel. All Israel shall hear and all shall fear. I guess the idea of being caught and stoned would cause a lot of folks to hear and fear, especially if they call themselves people of the cloth or ordained ministers. And, they got their tax deduction, their manse, but they probably don't like this one. No wonder you don't see this one preached on Sun God Day too often. Now, here's it sounds like that would be a place of closure, right? I mean, what more can happen? Answer, wait, there's more. If you hear tell concerning any of your cities, okay, let's just say, oh, I don't know, pick an easy example, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York. You hear about these cities, which Yehuyarel has given you to dwell there, and says, hey, there's some sons of Belial, base fellows, scumbags, we might say nowadays. They've gone out from the midst of you, and they've drawn away the inhabitants of their city, and they said, hey, let's go serve other gods. Do you think that could happen in San Francisco? Gods which you've not known. Well, you're supposed to do the following. Now, in this case, it's not easy. You can flip on Netflix or the evening news, and it's going to be advertised even. They'll have their little rainbow flags, and they'll be telling you what they've got. But anyway, you're supposed to check it out. They're saying, let's go serve other gods, which you've not known. We got our synagogue of Satan. We've got our guys here dancing naked, shaking their willies in front of little kids and saying, this is what matters, our gay pride flag. We're going to take what the God of the Bible has said is a sign of his covenant, turn it into something which is an abomination to him, because we love other gods better. And if you've seen Jonathan Kahn's book concerning those fake gods and what it is, that Ishtar, Easter, Astarte, Ashtaroth, what was she? She is literally the essence of what you see with Pride Month, Pride Week, taught in the schools. Molech is another. In other words, folks, there's nothing new under the sun. These same gods, and by the way, his book is called Return of the Gods for that reason, because that's his thesis, and I think he makes a pretty clear point. So, these folks are doing this, saying, let's serve these other gods. You inquire, you make your search, you ask diligently. Behold, if it's the truth, and the thing is made certain that this abomination really is being done in the midst of you, well, you shall surely smite the inhabitants of that city with lefi cherev, with the mouth of the sword. This says the edge of the sword, but it's really the mouth of the sword. Why? Because it drinks blood. It sheds blood. It's the mouth that bites. And you destroy that city utterly. And all that is therein, and even the animals that are therein, which I guess nowadays walk on two legs, with lefi cherev, the edge of the sword, the mouth of the sword. And you gather all the spoil of that out into the middle of some broad place thereof, and burn it with fire. Burn the whole city with fire. All the spoil thereof, every whit of it, unto Yehuyarel, and it shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. Now, you know, this is where I'm going to approach this carefully, because I'll just ask some questions, I guess, is the right way to do it. Obviously, this hasn't happened. The people of the land, a land that once held certain truths to be self-evident and accepted that there was a God of the Bible, and it's him that we worship, it's him that our rights come from, well, we got better gods, fake gods. Now, hell, they're building AI gods, even. They're going to be the new rulers. And you can see this. As a matter of fact, I would contend you can't miss it. You can't even lie to yourself and misunderstand what's going on here. So, has San Francisco been reduced into a heap? Has it been burned with fire? And has it, doesn't need to be built again, although I guess you could say it's covered with feces, but that's a whole different story. How about New York City? How about Los Angeles? Yeah, the examples are abundant. I can't help but wonder if people don't do it, and in fact, if it continues, how long can it continue? I'm not sure. Up until the point where he finally says, I've had enough, I'm going to burn it with fire. Make a heap out of it, and it shall not be built again. Are you kind of heading in the same direction as I am? Can you see what might cause a city to be reduced to a heap of ashes and never be built again? How about a radioactive wasteland? Well, at least it's a possibility. Let me just put it this way. I would say I wouldn't want to be in any of these places, period. Now, you shall cleave to nothing of the devoted thing in your hand. And what does that mean? We just saw at the end of chapter 7, you don't even bring one of these things into your house. Don't even covet the silver or gold that's on these idols, these fake things. Don't bring your little shrines. Don't bring these things that are somehow representative of fake gods into your house. And furthermore, do not cleave to anything of these devoted things in your hand. What's a devoted thing? That word there is ha-cherem. And the key is, right, devoted doesn't sound like a bad word, but I guess the question that it raises is, well, devoted to who? It's something devoted to a fake god, right? Is it some kind of a pagan totem or symbol or ankh or what we got, you know, African masks, pagan masks. There's all kinds of things. People, they go out and they bring this stuff home and say, isn't this cute? Isn't this wonderful pagan thing here? Isn't it so great? I'll hang it on my living room wall. Nothing wrong with that. You shall not cleave to the devoted thing, that Yahuwah may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and have compassion upon you and multiply you as he has sworn to your fathers. So I'm going to suggest, because he says so, don't even bring this crap into your house. When you shall hearken to the voice of Yehoyarel to keep some of his commandments, that's what the whole church says, no, to keep all of his commandments, which I command you, Hayom, this day, to do that which is right in the eyes of Yehoyarel. What is not right? Well, he's just told you, and he's shown you and shown us how much he detests it, abhors it, hates it. All right, that's the end of chapter 13. 14 begins in an interesting way, because it's a reminder of something very opposite to that. You, he says, are the children of Yehoyarel. You're different. You are the children of Yehoyarel. Do not cut yourselves, nor make any baldness between your eyes for the dead. Now, this one, too, is interesting, because if you've been paying attention, you know, I remember seeing this, 20 years ago, and it's still true. There is an epidemic of cutting among children. And not only that, you've got the California Department of Education will cut their genitalia and their breasts off. How's that for cutting? Don't make cuttings in your flesh for yourselves. Well, it started with kids saying, okay, I want to make this little cut in my wrist. I'm going to cut my arms, going to cut my legs. Why? Well, it seems how it says here, for the dead. What is this? This is a celebration. This is a worship of death. What have we got now? Well, we've moved beyond where just kids cut themselves. We've moved to the place now where if parents don't allow kids to cut their genitalia off, or some doctor to get paid by Big Brother to cut off a little girl's breasts, well, we'll take your kids away. We'll show you. We can cut them. You're the children of Elohim. Do not cut yourselves, nor make any baldness. Don't worship the dead this way. Don't do these things for the dead. You are to be set apart, a holy, a kadosh people unto Yehoyarel, and Yahuwah has chosen you to be his own treasure out of all the peoples that are upon the face of the earth. Now, at this point, we're going to get a repetition of something that the whore church doesn't like either. You shall not eat any abominable thing. Oh, we got TV shows dedicated to this, right? If it's an abomination, they'll get somebody to eat it, and they'll think how wonderful it is. We got our own TV show. These are the beasts which you can eat. In other words, these are what you should call food. You see terms in mistranslated English renderings, right? Letters of Paul about meat. Meat sacrificed to idols. Well, you know what, folks? Pig and men have meat, right? Men have meat. We talk about meat on our bones, but men are not food. Scripture makes that clear. Pigs are not food. Scripture makes that clear. So the problem is, a lot of people mistranslate these words and they say, well, food, all food is good. But you know what? The question is, what's food? And the stuff we're talking about here, you're not to eat it because it's abominable. It ain't food. It may have what you think of as meat, but it's not meat to eat. So here are the beasts which you may eat. The ox, the sheep, the goat, the hart, the gazelle, the roebuck, the wild goat, the pyarg, the pygarg. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but I guarantee you we could describe it, right? It's got a cloven hoof and it chews the cud. The antelope, the mountain sheep, every beast that meets that condition that has a parted hoof or a cloven hoof. The hoof is wholly cloven in two, in other words, and is the key word, right? We know the logic here. It must do both. One or the other ain't enough. It has to chew the cud. Among the beasts, if it meets those two criteria, you can eat it. Nevertheless, you shall not eat of those that just do one of those two, that only chew the cud, or that only have a cloven hoof. He gives examples of each. The camel, the bunny, the hare, the rock badger, well, they chew the cud, right? Everybody see little bunnies chew the cud? But they do not have a cloven hoof. They do not part the hoof. They are not food. They are not clean. The pig, the swine, because he does have a cloven hoof. He's a clever fellow. He looks like he might be food, but he's not. He doesn't chew the cud. He is unclean to you. As a matter of fact, of this animal, of this type of animal, kind of animal, the swine, the pig, the boar, it says, not only do you not eat it, you are not even to touch the carcasses. A pig dies, you don't even touch the flesh of that thing. How's that for don't eat it, don't touch it? Now, what's interesting is, that pretty well puts the kibosh on the pigskin football, doesn't it? All right. These things, he says, you may eat of all the things that are in the waters. If it's got scales and it has fins, it's food. You can eat it. And whatsoever does not have fins and scales, you shall not eat. It is unclean to you. It is not food. Of all the clean birds you may eat, but here are some that you can't. Now, in this case, we don't get a generalized description of how to identify clean birds from unclean birds. What we do get is a list, and I will contend the list kind of makes the point. Now, as I say this, beware. Okay, I'll warn you, this is Markology. I see a dot connection here, but I'm not going to claim thus speaks Yahuwah. He gives a list. And so the question is it or is it not on the list so that we know? Although it looks to me like there are some common denominators. So I'll mention that, but again, that is not what it says. What it says is here is the list of birds you may eat, but here are the things which you may not eat. And that's what we're actually seeing, is a list you're not eat, not food. The great vulture, the bearded vulture, the osprey, the gleed, the falcon, and the kite after its kinds. Well, so far, what have we got? Everything on that list, as far as I can see, is a meat-eating bird. Maybe unclean meat to boot, but it's a carrion bird. It's a scavenger bird, or it is literally a hunter bird, a bird that goes out and kills prey, like a vulture or the osprey. We're going to see eagles on the list, too. The raven, after its kind. Now, ravens will eat, their scavengers, they'll eat dead foods, although, to my surprise, I have seen ravens kill chickens. So they will kill other animals. The ostrich, the nighthawk, the seamew, the hawk, and their kinds. The little owl, the great owl, the horned owl, the pelican, the carrion vulture, the cormorant, the stork, the heron, the hoopoe, and the bat. Now, the bat, some scientists now would say, well, the bat's really more like a rodent with wings than it is a bird. But nevertheless, it flies, and it's not food. Okay. All the wing-swarming things are unclean to you. They shall not be eaten. Of all the wing things, though, that are clean, you may eat. So what do we got that's winged and clean? Well, things like doves and partridges, and most people would say chickens are on that list. You shall not eat of anything that dies by itself. I joke about this. That's not exactly what we're talking about here, but you could call it roadkill. Roadkill is actually not dying by itself. It's dying because a car hit it. But if you find some animal that's out dead in the field, don't eat it. You can give it to the stranger, though, that's within your gates. He'll eat it. Mikey'll eat it. Yeah. Or you can sell it to a foreigner. You, though, are a set-apart people unto Yahuwah. You are not to seethe a kid in its mother's milk. Now, that's another one that's weird. The rabbis will take that to mean you're not supposed to have cheeseburgers, right? Don't eat cheese and meat or milk products, dairy products, in the same meal with meat. Honestly, I've heard the rationale, but I don't get it. I don't quite go there. My best understanding is that there were pagan practices that included this, and this is what we're talking about, a hint, a vague resemblance. Don't do it because the pagans do it. But regardless, they will say, don't eat a cheeseburger. I can point to Genesis where Abraham had Yahuwah, and the other two messengers came. What did he give them? Milk and meat. Huh. All right. Anyway, you shall surely tithe all the increase of your seed, which is brought forth in the field year by year. Eat it before Yahuwah. Where? And the place where he shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. The tithe of your corn, of your wine, your oil, the firstlings of your herd, your flock, so that you may learn to fear Yahuwah always. And if it's too far for you, and the way is too long, so that you're not able to carry it, because that place is too far away, which Yahuwah has chosen to set his name there, when Yahuwah will so bless you, well, then you shall turn it into silver. Okay. In other words, what you're going to do is you're going to swap it for something that's easier to carry for that longer distance. So you turn it into silver, money, real money, as opposed to the fake stuff. No, we don't turn it into paper fiat, right? I owe you one chicken and one goat. You bind up the money, the kesef, the silver in your hand, and you go unto the place which Yahuwah shall choose. And there you can bestow that kesef, that silver, on whatsoever your soul desires. You can buy oxen or sheep or wine or strong drink. Ooh, that doesn't sound very Baptist, does it? Or whatever your soul wants for you, you can eat it there before Yahuwah. And here it is again, that word simcha, smeach. You shall rejoice, you and your household. the Levite that's within your gates, you shall not forsake him, because he does not have any portion with you. At the end of every 3 years, and in that same year, you bring forth all the tithe of your increase, lay it up within your gates, and the Levite, because he doesn't have a portion of your inheritance, and the stranger, the fatherless, the widow that are within your gates, they come, they shall eat and be satisfied, that Yehuyarel may bless you in all the work of your hand, which you do. So you will see listings of essentially various years and the kinds of tithes that are associated with those years. And here's another one in chapter 15. At the end of 7 years, every 7 years, you make a release. And here's the manner of that release. Every creditor shall release that which he's lent unto his neighbor. He shall not exact of it of his neighbor and his brother, because the release of Yahuwah has been proclaimed. Of a foreigner, though, you can exact it, but whatsoever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. Now, howbeit, there shall be no needy among you, for Yahuwah will surely bless you in the land which Yahuwah has given you for an inheritance to possess it, if only you diligently hearken to the voice of Yahuwah your El, to observe to do what? All of this commandment which I command you this day. And as we've seen, and as we know from history and Scripture, well, we're not in the land, are we? For Yehuyarel will bless you, as he's promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you. Well, gee, folks, the United States once upon a time fit that criterion. Now it's a borrower nation, and just about everybody rules over it. Matter of fact, they even pull the strings of the Biden puppet. If there is among you a needy man, one of your brethren, within any of your gates in the land which Yahuwah has given you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your needy brother. But it says, you shall surely open your hand to him, and you shall surely lend him sufficient for his need and that which he is wanting. Now, wanting doesn't mean that just because he wants a new Porsche, you have to buy it for him, I don't think. Wanting means he needs something like food or clothing, and he doesn't have it, so that's what he's wanting for. And that's what you help him provide. Beware that there not be a base thought in your heart saying, uh-oh, we're coming up on the seventh year. Oh, man, he ain't going to pay me back. The year of release is at hand, and your eye is evil against your needy brother, and you don't give him anything. And he cries unto Yahuwah against you, and that would be sin in you. You shall surely give him. Your heart shall not be grieved when you give unto him, because that for this thing, Yahuwah Yireh will bless you in all your work. In other words, you don't sweat it. You have trust in Yahuwah, faith in him. You give when your brother needs it. Now, notice, this is not saying just the guy on the streets in San Francisco who wants some more needles so he can go out and shoot up or whatever. This is your needy brother. You trust in Yahuwah, and he'll make it good. Because for this thing, Yahuwah Yireh will bless you in all your work, in all that you put your hand to. And then it says this, and notice that Yeshua also repeats this line, because the poor will never cease out of the land. Therefore I command you, saying, surely you shall open your hand unto your poor and needy brother in the land. Some folks, I guess, would point to this and say, oh, we don't have to do it because we're not in the land. We were exiled for not doing this. Ha ha ha, aren't we clever? All right, if your brother is an Ivri, a Hebrew man, or a Hebrew woman, and he is sold unto you, and we know this because we've seen this before. It was in Exodus 21, for example. He shall serve you for 6 years. Seventh year, you let him go out for free. In other words, he doesn't have to pay you back. And when you let him go, you don't let him go out empty-handed. You provide for him. Furnish him liberally out of your flock, out of your threshing floor, out of your wine press. Of that wherewith Yahuwah your El has blessed you, you shall give unto him. And you shall remember, Zakar, that you were a bondman in the land of Egypt, and Yehuyarel redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing this day, Ha-Yom. And it shall be, if he says unto you, I will not go out from you, because he loves you in your house, because he has fared well with you, well then, you take an all. Okay, this is the serve you forever bondservant thing. Take an all, bore it through his ear. You literally nail his ear to the doorpost of the house with the awl. And he shall be your bondsman forever. And you shall do the same, or if they choose anyway, unto your bondwoman you shall do likewise. It shall not seem hard to you when you let him go free from you, because for to the double of the hire of the hireling he has served you for 6 years, and Yahuwah your El will bless you in all that you do. So essentially, when the time comes, be thankful, let him go, bless him, and you will be provided for by Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and that's part of the act of faith. Now, there's one other interesting comment. I usually point this out. Years ago, I had a discussion with a friend of mine who was a very well-known rabbi. Unfortunately, it's the late rabbi at this point. But his commentary was the Hebraic teaching is that if your bond servant says to you, "I won't go out," it probably means you failed. We as Americans would tend to say, "Oh, see, a good master, like Big Brother, a good master, the slave doesn't want to be free. He wants to be a slave forever." That is not the Hebraic thought method, and I always thought this was kind of fascinating. Because the point of bond service is what he was in debt. He somehow fell short. Fell on hard times, maybe, but he needs to learn something about walking in obedience. And as a bondservant, your job, among other things, is to teach him that. So essentially what the Hebraic teaching was is if he comes to you and says, "I won't go out free," you failed. He should be ready. You should have taught him to live as a free man so that he should be ready. He should say, "Thank you. I have learned a lot from my time here, and thank you for blessing me, and now I'm going to go out and be a productive member of society." Okay, I think the way that this portion is phrased, it's phrased differently a bit elsewhere in Scripture. This certainly does make it sound like he just plain loves you and he wants to stay. So I guess that is also a possibility. But I would certainly be inclined to say, if you ever were to have a bondservant, the goal is to teach him Torah, to teach him how to live as a free man. And by the way, part of the reason I emphasize that is because we certainly see a different kind of slavery today. We have a debt slavery today, which is permanent, which is never-ending. And as much as people rail about the servitude and the slavery of the antebellum times in America and many, many, many other places in the world, Islam was famous for taking slaves and so forth. We have sex slaves, major trade today. So for all this railing against slavery, the point is, Hebrew bond service is a whole different thing, always was, than the kind of cruel bondage that, in fact, the people of Egypt instituted and kept the mixed multitude under, and indeed the kind of thing Scripture talks about. Not at all what we would think of as the kind of slavery that we generally see, and indeed the kind of slavery that most Americans, whether they know it or not, as debt slaves, are laboring under. And think of it. They don't get free at the end of 7 years. The IRS doesn't come to you and say, "Hey, it's been 7 years. We're going to bless you with some stuff, and you can go out and be free and live as a free man." Hardly. All right. Where do we go from here? The firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock, you shall set apart, sanctify unto Yehuyarel. Do no work with them, with the firstling of your ox, nor with the firstling of your flock. You don't shear the firstling of your flock. You shall eat it before Yehuyarel year by year in the place which Yahuwah shall choose, you and your household. Now, if there's any blemish on it, or lameness, or blindness, any blemish whatsoever, you do not sacrifice it unto Yehuyarel, but you may eat it within your gates. The unclean and the clean may eat it alike, as the gazelle and as the hart. Only, right, we know this, you shall not eat the blood. You pour that out on the ground, like it was water. Chapter 16 is the final chapter in the Parsha, at least a lot of it here. And again, it is going to reprise for us some of those things which the whore church, by adding to and subtracting from and forgetting, they subtracted from all of his feasts and they added pagan crap in its place. Well, I guess it's important to go back and say what we should have been doing all along. And by the way, it's fair to note that if they caught people keeping these feasts, they not only called them Judaizers, but throughout a lot of our history, they killed them. Observe the month of Abib. Keep the Pesach, the Passover, unto Yahuwah, to Yirel. For in the month of Abib, Yahuwah Yirel brought you out of Egypt by night. And you shall sacrifice the Passover offering unto Yahuwah of the flock and the herd in the place which Yahuwah shall cause his name to dwell there. So that has appeared a number of times in this Parsha. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you eat unleavened bread therewith, even the bread of affliction, because in haste you came forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, so that you might remember Zakar, the day when you did come forth out of the land of Egypt, all of the days of your life. And there shall be no leaven seen with you in any of your borders for 7 days, nor shall any of the flesh which you sacrifice the first day at evening remain all night until the morning. You may not sacrifice the Passover offering with any of your gates, which Jehoiarel has given you, but at the place which Jehoiarel shall choose to cause his name to dwell in. There you shall sacrifice the Pesach offering at evening, at the going down of the sun, at the season that you came forth out of Egypt. And you shall roast it and eat it in the place which Jehoiarel shall choose. And you shall turn in the morning and go unto your tents. 6 days you eat unleavened bread. On the seventh day is a solemn assembly to Jehoiarel. You shall do no work on that. 7 weeks, then it says, 7 weeks you shall number unto you. So here's the 7 times 7. From the time the sickle is first put to the standing corn, you begin to count for 7 weeks to number them. And you shall keep the feast of weeks. You'll hear this called the feast of Shavuot as well. Sometimes it's Pentecost for 50 days. I tend to like the Hebrew terms better, of course. But you call this the Feast of Weeks of Shavuot unto Jehoiarel, after the measure of the freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give according as Jehoiarel has blessed you. And here it is again. You shall make joy, be joyful, Simchat, before Jehoiarel. You, your son, your daughter, your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite that's within your gates, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, that are in the midst of you, in the place which Jehoiarel shall cause his name to dwell there. And here it is again. And you shall remember that you were a bondman in Egypt, and you shall observe and do these statutes. Now, there's one more we're going to hear. Before we get there, point out again, I think everybody knows this, that's been through the Torah portion, even part of it, for a cycle or so. These are often called the Feast of Ascension. There's another name in Hebrew for them. But just remember, this is the set of three feasts where all of the males in the land were called to go to the place. All right, this would have been the reason why Yeshua's parents went to Jerusalem. They went back to the place of the house of David in Bethlehem. And this was for Sukkot. We're getting ready to talk about Sukkot. So it's very clear that the reason they gathered to these places was because it was one of the Feasts of Ascension. In other words, it didn't happen in December. And it's not that complicated. All right. You shall keep, it says, this is verse 13 in chapter 16, you shall keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And this, of course, is Sukkot, the plural there, for 7 days, after you've gathered in from your threshing floor and from your wine press. So this is kind of the feast that marks the harvest time. And you shall rejoice. There it is again. By the way, lots and lots of rejoicing going on at this time of Tabernacles. That's kind of the theme of Tabernacles, is rejoice. And if you think about it, and the wedding feast, and so many of the metaphors in Scripture, and the reason why we're to keep these things, at least the reason that it seems to be, because it helps us to understand what's coming, well, the reason for the rejoicing, I think at least, becomes more and more clear. You shall rejoice in your feast. You, your son, your daughter. We've heard this, right? Your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow that are within your gates. 7 days you shall keep this feast unto Jehoiarel in the place which Yahuwah shall choose, because Jehoiarel shall bless you in all your increase and in all the work of your hands, and you shall be altogether, right? Say it with me, joyful. Samach. Huh. 3 times in a year shall all your males appear before Jehoiarel in the place which he shall choose. On the Feast of Unleavened Bread, in other words, the Passover time frame, during the Feast of Weeks, the time of Shavuot, and during the Feast of Sukkot, or Tabernacles. And, this is important, you shall not appear before Yahuwah empty-handed. You take something. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of Jehoiarel, which he has given you. And interestingly, that ends the portion, and I do think it's kind of a poignant way to end. It says, don't go to these things. These are feasts of ascension. The essential element of them is we are to remember to Zakar. There are certainly things he's going to teach us. All of us that have been through this can say, oh yeah, a lot of things we learn from these feasts. I believe there are a lot of things that are prophesied by these feasts and are prophetically associated with these feasts, many of them things that are yet to come. Certainly among those things that we have seen fulfilled was what Yeshua did during the time of Passover, his first time around. And I can't help but think, you know, the way our Creator tends to work, you can almost see how it's laid out, right? Guess when he's probably coming back? Fall feasts. Spring feasts? Fall feasts. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Does it say that explicitly? No. Does it say it implicitly? Yeah, about 100 times. Okay? And by the way, what is the element here that connects them, among others? Not just see, observe, do, understand, keep, remember, but you shall be joyful. And that is particularly true of the time of Sukkot. So I guess if there was a time where we say the Mashiach is coming back, and what would be the singular emotional reaction that we might have to that? Yeah, joy, joyful, sameach, rejoice. That pretty well fits, doesn't it? Every man shall give as he's able, according to the blessing of Yahuwah on us, and those things which he has given us. And when you think of it that way, especially when you talk about the return and the time of the fall feasts and the wedding feasts, kind of lends an entirely new understanding to being joyful and not showing up empty-handed because of all that he has blessed us with.